Thank you for visiting ChristopherMedia.net. Check out the Weedsman Podcast, Tuesdays and Fridays on iTunes and ChristopherMedia.net. Christopher Media, let's make some noise. Christopher Media, let's make some noise. Welcome to Beer Nuts, a weekly excursion into the world of craft beer, brought to you by MichiganBeerGuide.com. And now, here are the Beer Nuts.
Okay, welcome to Beer Nuts number two. I am Chris. With me is JR from MichiganBeerGuide.com.
Right here.
We got Uncle Pete.
How you doing?
We got Aaron.
Hello.
And welcome to our second foray into the craft beer world. Aaron and I we're merely passengers, really.
Like, I'm just, long for the ride.
I'm just sitting here going, like, I have been buying and drinking beer wrong the entire time.
Check out the first show.
What's that?
I said JR is here to set us straight.
Yeah, I know. Well, checked out the first show, you learned a lot about IPAs. We learned a lot about IPAs.
You haven't been necessarily doing it wrong, but again, we're here to spread the gospel of discovering better beers. And now you're discovering better beers, and you're discovering, hey, maybe there's more out there than just a fizzy yellow lager. Look, there's no right or wrong. That's our motto. There's no right or wrong. If you like fizzy yellow beer, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But we think that we can appeal to those types of drinkers as well as connoisseurs of sours and saisons.
There's a whole palette of selections out there that really going to turn you on if you check it out.
So I always like to start the show with our beer quote of the week, and this is one of my all-time favorites, and it ties into tonight's segment. It's, quote, "I would give all my fame for a pot of ale and safety." And that's from Shakespeare, Henry VIII. And if you were a king of the world and somebody was after you or anything, nothing more than just let me hide out and just drink some really good ale.
Yeah, so, I do that quite a bit.
I kind of
hide out and I drink beer and sometimes I invite my friends.
Isn't that the time of year where we're coming up? We do that every Sunday anyway.
That's pretty much football season's coming up.
Yeah.
And all I want is a pot of ale and my football.
That's right.
My lounge chair.
Please don't let the cable go out.
Yeah, I got the Sunday ticket, man.
Don't let the keg run dry and don't let the cable go out.
So I love that quote, and that's what we're going to kick the show off. And how it ties in is Shakespeare's obviously English, and we're going to talk about stout this week. We started out our episode one on IPA, but today we're going into something I revere a lot, and that's stout. You know,
we love
from
stout.
The hoppy stuff to the dark stuff, and I love the dark side.
We're going
side.
To the dark side.
Yeah, man.
Let's go.
So we're going to start out because we're thirsty. So we're going to drink one of the legendary stouts that really was put this category on the map, and that's Guinness Stout. Guinness is a dry Irish stout, and hang on while I pop one.
Crack that sucker. So this Guinness Stout, is it?
like dark side, right?
Darth Vader. I'm your father. I am your stout.
By the way, Aaron, this file is 1 hour of this.
Oh, Jesus.
It's like putting on the fireplace on the screen and you can watch Darth Vader breathing.
A lot of people think Guinness Stout is like this big, thick mud, you know, really strong alcohol, and it's like loaded with calories and it's going to make me, you know, obese. Well, you know what? It's got roughly the same amount of calories as a Miller Lite. A lot of people don't know that. And one of the reasons is it's not very strong. It's around 3.5%, 4% alcohol. So that's a good thing if you're watching your figure. And, you know, it's actually very flavorful and easy to drink.
What's smooth and green. What's this thing rattling around in the Guinness can, JR?
That's called a widget.
Widget.
When you go to a bar and you order a pint of Guinness, you ever notice it'll take a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's to pour a proper pint. Well, there's nitrogen in there that makes it creamy, that delivers the beer with a mixture of CO2 and nitrogen.
Do you think nitrogen makes it creamier than CO2, than carbon dioxide?
It's a mixture. It's a mixture of some of each. And obviously there's CO2 in the beer because it's beer, and beer, a natural byproduct of brewing is CO2. But by putting the nitrogen in, it introduced, see that nice creamy head there? You don't get that with just CO2.
So that's why that head is like that, is from the nitrogen?
Yes. And you can get a bottle.
Never knew that.
You can get a bottle of Guinness. Like some of the bottled products doesn't have the widget, and it doesn't deliver the same. I think they actually do have the draft Guinness bottles, which
they
still
have bottles with a widget.
They have it with
the
widget,
but
they
also have just the regular Guinness bottles that do not have it,
right.
And it's completely different. But they're all, as they would say in Ireland, lovely.
I wonder if there's ever been a lawsuit of somebody somebody like swallowed the widget, you know.
I hope not.
I hope not. Yeah, yeah. That's a hazard.
So we're going to start, and we're all going to do a cheers. And in cheers. Ireland, they would say sláinte. So we say sláinte.
Sláinte.
And I have been. Clink. I have been to the St. James Gate.
Smell that one, Chris. What do you smell? First thing. Boom.
Vanilla.
To me, it's Guinness.
Okay.
It's roasted barley.
That's what roasted barley smells like?
Yeah. Yes. So a little bit of history of stout. Stout originated in London in the 17th century as a strong, full-bodied varieties of porter called stout porters. In the late 1700s, Guinness stout introduced as a 7.5%, much stronger than the Guinness we know of today. And that's actually still produced today and very popular in the Caribbean. And it's known as foreign export stout because it got sent to that region, and also known, the style is known as tropical stout. If you go to the islands, I went in my honeymoon in Antigua, and I was on an all-inclusive resort, and they had like basic beer selections and stuff, but about 100 yards down the beach, there was this little shack, and I met this Rasta guy out there trying to sell me everything under the sun, and I told him, where can I get a good beer? And he goes, oh, come on here, man. And so he walked me down the beach to this little wooden shack that had Guinness foreign stout.
Is there a lot of smoke coming out of that shack?
It was coming out of the Kingman. The Kingman was the guy's name. And yeah, there was a lot of smoke coming out of him. But I was on my honeymoon, and so I was a good boy.
You were feeling adventurous, though. You were heading down the beach to a
farm. But it's, you know what? The foreign stout was just fine for me at that point.
So it's still branded as Guinness, but it's just called Guinness foreign export stout?
And but it's a much stronger. It's 7.5%.
We don't see that around here.
You know what? They did reintroduce it into Michigan a year or two ago, and I understand the sales weren't very high, so they pulled it.
I wonder if it's in other parts of the country.
Yes, I'm sure it is, and it's probably in certain urban markets where there's a demand for it, they'll sell it. But you know, they were sending it here, and there wasn't enough demand for the product. People don't know. I mean, that's why we're doing podcasts like this, to get people to know, and then they can create an uproar, and then we can get this.
If I can get an 8%, Guinness stout, I'd go for that versus whatever
it's phenomenal. But you know what? The beauty of it is we homebrew. We can recreate
it. We can do that.
I think that could be a future collaboration beer.
I think so.
You can make it better.
Yeah.
But I, every day, you know, my new wife, why are you going down the beach with the Kingman all the time? She probably thought I was sparking up. But
yeah, no, right?
I'm like, man, I'm going for that foreign extra stout. Man, that was good stuff. I'd go there and I'd drink one with the Kingman. I'd buy him one, and then I'd buy one for the road. And I'd come back, and it was way better than the mainstream beers that were available to me on the resort.
Well, that's an interesting story. You know, in the Caribbean, all I ever think of is Red Stripe.
Right.
Jamaican, right? I hear about Red Stripe beer.
Yaman. Red Stripe. Was it No Worries or?
Well, that would be a lager, wouldn't it? A Red Stripe or?
It's a lager. And that's Jamaica. And I believe that brand is now brewed domestically. I think there was a big uproar.
Oh.
You know, there's a lot of that going on in the beer world where larger breweries are taking iconic brands like a Red Stripe that was originally brewed in Jamaica. And other examples would be Bass Ale from England that was brewed for 100 plus years in England. And Anheuser-Busch InBev bought the brand, and now they brew that beer in St. Louis.
Right.
And there's two sides to that coin. A lot of people would say, oh, the big guy ruining the brand.
Watered down. Oh, no.
And, you know, I mean, there's some, they're known to cut costs and maybe use inferior ingredients. So there is probably some truth to that.
Economy of scale.
But the other side of that coin is when you brew something domestically, you save on the shipping costs and you have a fresher product. So really the best of both worlds would be to protect the integrity of the ingredients and brew it domestically. And then maybe that would be not so bad.
Right.
But I have a feeling that they cut a few corners.
Some trade-offs. Yeah.
So another iconic brand that happened with is Beck's beer from Bremen, Germany, one of the iconic classic German beers of all time, is now brewed in Baldwinsville, New York.
Wow.
So, a lot of customers, they don't read the small print on the label. They think they're getting this nice German import, and it's brewed in a bud plant.
Well, as long as they're still following Reinheitsgebot and the laws of German purity laws, right?
Well,
you hope they are.
It's debatable whether they are. I don't know. Maybe not. We'll never know. Only ABI knows.
Everybody say that. But, Reinheitsgebot.
Reinheitsgebot.
Reinheitsgebot. Very good. Sounded out three syllables.
And what the Reinheitsgebot is you can only brew with traditional ingredients, the four ingredients.
And those would be?
Barley, malt, water, yeast, and water.
And yeast and water, right.
And if you add anything else to that, you are violating the Reinheitsgebot. Oh, I said barley and malt. That's the same thing.
Yeah, whoops.
Malted, barley, yeast, hops, and water.
That's right.
Okay. Now we're on track. I'll have another sip. I'm going to have another sip. But getting back to the topic at hand. So there are several different types of stouts. Guinness is probably the most widely known and probably best selling. And it's a wonderful beer. Back in a previous life, I worked for a wholesaler and won a trip to St. James Gate in Dublin in 1988.
Oh, that would be a dream trip.
And that was wonderful. We got to go to the brewery. And I can tell you this, that the Irish will say, it doesn't travel well. Because the Guinness that you get in Ireland is like a milkshake. It's so smooth and creamy. And no matter how much I like it here, it's never as good as it had.
Why? Water. Why is it like that?
It doesn't travel well. I don't know exactly why.
It's the water. The water.
I think it's just the freshness factor. I mean, you get it, and there's a big demand for it in Dublin, so it's always fresh. It's always... Oh, I can't describe it.
Kind of like when you buy Bell's in Kalamazoo, it's always better than wherever you buy it, because it's... coming from the source.
If you get a fresh two-hearted ale versus one that's a month old, it would be a difference.
There's so many variables, though, and you start breaking it down to those four ingredients like you just talked about. I start with the water, right? The water you get in Dublin is not the same as the water you're going to get over here. Right. You can treat the water and make it seem the same.
But they export it using the water. You know, they brew it in Dublin and export it to the U.S., but it still doesn't travel well. It loses something. I don't know what it is. All I can tell you is if you ever get the chance, it's a bucket list thing. Go to Ireland. Go to St. James Gate. Get a fresh Guinness somewhere in Dublin. And it'll the proper pint takes time. They pour it about half full, and then they stop. They let it settle. Then they do like two more rituals of that. And it takes like 2-3 minutes to properly pour it. So I always wait till I was about half done with my pint.
That's
and I'd
a long
order another
time
one.
To properly pour a beer. Just sitting there waiting. Like
you know
2 minutes is a long time.
It's torture on the first one, but when you're halfway done your pint, you order your second one. Yeah. Way by the time they've done
you get ahead of the curve.
You start pouring that halfway through.
Oh, a great story on another trip. After that trip, I had actually a personal friend that was a roommate of mine in the D.C. area in the early 90s from Dublin who moved back there for good, and I went and visited him. And we went to this small blue-collar town where his wife was from, and he warned me on the way there, oh, we're going to not that great of an area. I don't know if you're going to have a good time, but just... And he was like all skittish about where we were going. And it was the best night of my trip. We went there, and his father-in-law, I was the only one drinking Guinness, and he's an older gentleman in Dublin, and he just loved that I was drinking and Guinness, you know, he had a lot of pride in that iconic brand that his country serves up. And at they don't have last call there. They call it last orders. And what last orders is, it's the last opportunity to order beer. But you can order a couple of beers, and once they're in front of you, you're entitled to stay there and finish them.
Oh, cool.
So, as they say in Ireland, I went to the loo, and when I came back from the loo, there were 3 pints lined up in front of me, and I'm like, what's this? And he goes, oh, I've been watching you drink. He goes, you and I will have our 3 pints down before the rest of these lads. They were all drinking, like, you know, Carlsberg and Heineken and lager beer. So he took a liking to me, and it was reciprocal.
That's
I really
a good
had
memory.
A,
good story.
And you know what? It wasn't a bad area. As soon as we were done, we went to the fish and chipper next door, and it was very, very wonderful. Memorable evening that I'll never forget. So
fantastic. Good story.
You talk about it makes me want to try this Irish Guinness, not the stuff that's shipped over here. Now I'm going to have to go to Ireland.
I know the stuff that you get is still good.
My other Guinness story is on that trip, the first trip in 1988, where I went to the brewery. It was our first night there. We were in a hotel and we had an organized activity, and we went to a castle and had a medieval dinner where you didn't eat with any utensils. That was pretty cool.
Oh, nice. And then medieval times. They got that over there?
It was actually a castle. Bunratty Castle was the name of the castle. So we did this, you know, big cool thing, and everybody comes back to the hotel, and it was a small hotel called the Clare Inn in County Clare in the west side of the country. And we're sitting at the pub, and at like 10 o'clock at night, they called the dreaded last orders. So, you know, so we each ordered a couple pints, and we got through then, and about 10:30, pub was closed, and we were out of beer, and we didn't know what to do, and we heard this huge ballroom was going nuts, and it was a wedding reception being held in the hotel. And of course, one of these guys on the trip, a buddy that I met, worked for a distributor in Florida. He goes, I'll be right back, guys. We're not done. And he goes in, and about 5 minutes later, he comes back to the table. He goes, come on. I found a whole table full of Irish girls that I told them we work for Guinness, and we're here in this trip, and we're welcome in. It's a cash bar. I said, perfect, cash bar. All we have to do is buy people some rounds, and they'll be happy. So we went in, and we were welcomed in. So one of us went up to the guy that got us from Florida that got us into the party, ran up to the bar, bought a whole bunch of beers back. And his beer was not a Guinness. It was a Smittix, which you probably see it in this country now called Smith. It looks like Smithwick's, but it's called Schmittix. Uh-huh. It's pronounced Schmittix. And back in 1988, that was not exported to the U.S. So this guy saw this brand that he had never heard. Oh, I want to try that. You know, that's interesting. I want to try it. Well, so we're sitting there and we're having a good old time drinking these beers with all these Irish girls and everything's going great, and all of a sudden this Irish guy stumbles up to the table. He looks like he's had a few, and he just stares at everybody at the table, and he has like a scowl on his face, and he looks at my friend that invited us to the party and what the Schmittix, and he goes, "Nobody talks to my sister who drinks Schmittix." and he comes right over to me, staggers into me and puts his arm around me like I'd known him all his life, and he goes, "Here's a real man drinking a Guinness." And that guy that had the Schmittix couldn't head to the bar fast enough and bought like 15 Guinnesses back to the table. So, and the guy's name that is, we were speaking with his sister at the table, his name was Seamus, a nice Irish name. What evolved out of that was we decided to do a chug. We're like, oh, yeah, let's do a chug, you know. And we invited Seamus to join the chug. He goes, he couldn't talk. He was pretty half in the bag already. He goes, "What is this chig?" He kept saying chig with his accent. He couldn't say chug, you know, between his accent and his drunkenness. So we all did a toast. And
demonstration.
Cheers. And we tapped our glasses. And, you know, within 3 seconds, our beer was gone, you know. It was, "Shit, how do you do this with Guinness? You cannot drink Guinness that fast." And we're like, "Oh yeah, let's do another one." So and he goes, "Tell me, how do you do this?" He goes, "Well, everybody drinks their beer down, and the last guy done has to buy the next round." Okay, that's how you do the chig. So needless to say, Seamus brought a few rounds and was feeling it the next day.
So going around scouting for weak drinkers, like, all right, let's play it with that guy.
That's right.
So he, you know, we thought it was a Mexican standoff when he came to the table, and he ended up being our best buddy by the end of the night. And the epilogue to that was the next night in the bar, the same thing happened. We came back from an organized activity, and we walk into the pub to catch last call at the bar in the hotel, and who's there but Seamus and a buddy. Hey, there they are. We've been practicing our chigs all night. And we went up, and he still wasn't as fast as I, but he was getting better. And as we got on the plane to fly home, and we were the leader of our trip handed out various awards for various things that happened on the trip. I got some kind of like booby prize award for teaching the Irish how to chig. So on that,
great story.
Good old Irish chig.
Apparently I've chigged too much.
Oh, well, nobody talks to my sister who drinks Schmittix.
Good stories. I love that. International relations at their best.
So we are just about, has everybody done their Guinness yet?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It's a brand I'll always love. And it's a mainstream brand. A lot of craft beer drinkers don't really revere it. But
I've been known to, when I order a Guinness, if they pour it right, I'll sit there and stare while they're pouring and just admire. When you get if you ever notice, to make that foamy head, you'll get this cascade of carbonation that's just a beauty to look at. Mm-hmm. And you just want to stare at it. It's so beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like watching a waterfall.
It's like a waterfall and just cascading bubbles.
It really is. And just because a beer is maybe easy to get or mass produced doesn't mean it's still not fantastic. And I'll always revere a good pint of Guinness, like you said.
Yeah. For the longest time, it was my after dinner beer.
Yeah.
After I'm done. Because I did all the cooking. So I'd cook, clean up, and have a Guinness to myself.
Nice.
You know, when you talk about the Irish and the English, one of the things a lot of people know that they don't drink their beer as cold as we do in America. But the other thing is, in general, most of their beers are not as strong as ours.
Right.
Because, you know, their mantra is they're in for the long haul, man. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. Mm-hmm. And they would rather, you know, open the pub up and close it and drink all day. And if you go to Scotland, I've been to Edinburgh. In Scotland, they have 60 shilling, 70 shilling, 80 shilling.
Right.
Various strengths. And the milder, you know, the lower the number, the milder the strength.
Right.
And if you're in there and you just want to be drinking pint after pint, you're going to probably want a 50 shilling or a 60 shilling. And if you get over 70, I think they call them wee heavies.
Yeah.
And those are like the real strong stuff. Those are like one and two and done.
Well, it seems to me there was a part of the culture, right, is, you know, you work so many hours for, let's say, half of your day. Let's say you work 4 hours and a half of your day, and you get a break, and I mean, it was okay by law. I mean, you could could have a few beers, right?
Yeah.
And so thus, we talked earlier in another podcast about session ales.
Yep.
You want ales that aren't going to weigh you down or get you too loaded, you know, and they're going to satisfy your palate, and you're going to enjoy it and be able to go back to work for another session, so to speak, a couple of hours, and, you know, be able to have a few beers after that.
So, yeah, there are a lot of, some people in the, you know, in the craft circle, oh, I don't want, that's not a strong beer, I don't want that, you know. But,
yeah,
you
they
want
to go to the top, man. They want to go the whole way.
And that's fine, but, you know, you're going to have, you know, two, maybe three beers, and you're done. And when you have these, like a Guinness, you could sit there and knock back a bunch of pints and still be able to go to work the next day. So that's just a cultural difference. I mean, they spend more time in the pub, and they would rather have a weaker everyday drink.
Right.
Which not necessarily
seems sensible to me.
Although I guess you could say Miller Lite, all our light, weak, yellow, fizzy light lagers are probably
the extreme.
Yeah, it's
that.
Us doing the same thing.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
It's quantity or quality. But at least the beers over in the UK and Ireland have some flavor to them. So let's move on to some other types of stout. There are other types of milk stout. Have you ever brewed a milk stout, Pete?
I've done sweet stouts.
Does it involve milk?
Oh, lactose, I think, is a component.
Lactose is
sugar.
A component.
It's a sugar.
It's an unfermentable sugar. Most sugars, when you put them into, when you're brewing, they brew, the sugars get converted into alcohol and CO2. That's what the brewing process does, the fermentation process. But lactose is a non-fermentable sugar.
Yeah, I've never purposefully used lactose, but I've made, you know, dry style stouts and sweet style stouts, but that was just, you know, by different amounts of malt and different kinds of malt that I used. But I never used a lactose, which I should try sometime.
What the lactose does is, since it's non-fermentable, it enables the beer to come out sweeter because the sugar is still there. It doesn't get fermented out. If you fully ferment any other beer, all the sugars get fermented out and it becomes dry. So that's a milk stout. I do not have any milk stout here, but I wanted to mention that because it's one of the styles. But we do have here, we have a chocolate stout. There's several ingredients that people put into stout. You can put vanilla beans in, coffee, coconut, chili peppers. But chocolate malt is one of the basic ingredients. You always have roasted barley like in a Guinness is like a staple for all stouts, but chocolate malt is a close second cousin.
But it's not chocolate, right? It's just a characteristic. Nope. It's the color.
It's roasted to the color that would mimic a chocolate color.
Right. And,
but it does have like kind of that chocolatey, roasty.
It does take on
characteristics.
Some characteristics.
But it has nothing to do. There is no chocolate. No
I always
cocoa.
Think of my malt. You know, there's different levels of malt roasting, right? So you've got very mild roast or your light colored malts. This is the barley grain that's been, you know, oven dried right after germination of the grain itself, and it goes all the way up the scale in color, you know, all the way up to chocolate.
Black patent malt.
And so the longer you leave it in the oven to roast, it gets more caramelized sugar and more roasted, you know, dark color on it, and it gives different character to the beer. For those of you that haven't thought much about malt before, I thought I'd say that.
Well, all that talk about malt's making me really thirsty.
Yeah, me too.
So what we have here, I might as well spill the beans. Our brewery of the week this week for episode number 2 is going to be an English brewery that covers almost all the styles of stouts that we want to cover today. And it's Samuel Smith's Old Brewery in Tadcaster in North Yorkshire, England.
Is that a name or a type?
That's a name.
I've had that before.
You know what? That might be the name of my next fantasy football team, the Tadcasters.
Yeah.
It's just a cool name, isn't it?
Sounds like a rejected Fender model.
Right, doesn't it?
Right. It's not quite a Telecaster. It's just still a little Tadcaster.
So, this is Samuel Smith's Organic Chocolate Stout. Malt beverage with natural flavor added. Samuel Smith's Brewery, Yorkshire. North Yorkshire, product of the United Kingdom.
England coming strong in this episode.
So,
we should say Great Britain.
I would give all my fame for a pot of Samuel Smith's in safety.
Shakespeare. Love those
quotes. So, we're going to crack this open and enjoy some organic Samuel Smith's chocolate.
Now, organic, what do you think that connotates?
I believe it's the ingredients are not mass-produced, probably.
Small local farm, you know, suppliers, small local farms and stuff.
That would be my best guess.
Locally sourced.
I'm not really up on the, you know, I'm not, I don't. Eat a lot of organic foods. I probably should.
Farm to bottle.
Oh, whoa.
You smell it?
Well, actually, I got a little drop on my lighter here, and I licked it off my thumb. Wow. I'm interested to taste it.
So smell it first and tell us what you're experiencing.
Smells a little sweeter than... It smells like Guinness, but you got a little sweet.
Yeah, if you just melted a pot of milk chocolate and stuck your nose over it and smelled it.
Oh, that smells amazing.
And that... Wow. Wow.
Mm, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
So you're happier with this than the IPA show?
Liquid Candy Bar. Yeah.
This is more up your alley.
This is great.
Yeah.
Whatever. This is awesome.
Have one of these after dinner. That's your dessert right there.
Yeah. You go.
I like that idea.
Well, usually chocolate beer has always disappointed me. Not now. Well, chocolate stout. Sorry.
Samuel Smith.
Well, we probably need somebody with a little more green knowledge to tell us exactly what organic is, but whatever it is, it's damn good, isn't it?
No kidding.
It translates to good with craft beer.
Yeah, but it's not. It's got the chocolate flavor, but it's not like sweet, like somebody just added some syrup to it or something.
Oh, it's got that, what do you guys call it, the finish? It's got that sweet finish.
It's got
to
like
it.
A bittersweet chocolate finish.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, if there was sugar in it, it would have fermented out. So.
Right.
Yeah, but that's really, a treat. Really creamy, smooth, kind of vanilla-y, a little bit of vanilla.
Right. Have you had this before, Pete?
I have, one time, yeah. Good. Boy, this is a real standard right here. This is really tasty.
Oh, it's delicious. So, Samuel Smith's.
All right, Tadcaster.
There's actually one of my favorite beers that they brew is a Taddy Porter. It's called Taddy Porter.
I've also had that.
Some other winners from them are... Has anyone had Stingo?
I have not.
Stingo is like I think it's 11 or 12%. It's really strong.
Not Stiegel.
Stingo, S-T-I-N-G-O, no. Stingo. I've had that before, and I remembered it's a really, really good, strong porter. My all-time favorite is our beer of the week, Samuel Smith's Oatmeal Stout. Now, back when I was working for mainstream beer companies and hadn't really discovered, and frankly, before there really were, the craft beer boom hit, because I'm kind of older,
mm-hmm.
This used to be my favorite beer in the world, I would say Samuel Smith's Oatmeal Stout.
Right.
That has since been dethroned by something else. It was for a long time my favorite beer in the world, and it's still one of my top five favorites.
So it's interesting, you know, we talked about the ingredients, and typically barley is the mainstay, you know, grain for beers, but you can complement with other grains like oats, right?
Yep, and the flaked oats give it a much more full body. That's what it does.
It gives it body, oats.
And so it thickens the beer up, and it makes it really robust and very enjoyable. It
feels like you have a mouthful that you can really chew on, you know.
So when we're done this chocolate, we're going to crack open one of these oatmeal stouts. It's just tremendous.
Now, I've heard about Russian stouts. What about that? What's behind all that?
We're going to taste...
Comrade.
We're going to taste one of your homebrewed Russian Imperial stouts soon.
Yeah.
One of your treasured ones. But Russian Imperial stouts, going back to when the 18th century, the Baltic states were occupied by England back in the 16 and 1700s, I believe. But anyway, the Imperial stout was brewed in England and made its way to the Baltic states and into Russia. I think it was Catherine II. The Imperial Court of Russia loved this beer. It was really strong. Because it was high in alcohol, it preserved longer. You could, you know, cellar it for a couple of years.
Yeah, store it away.
So that's how Russian Imperial Stout got its name. Literally, the royalty of Russia treasured this beer, and there became a great demand for it in Russia, and it was brewed in England for the Russians. And that's where Russian Imperial Stout comes from. It's a very, it's high alcohol, usually between 9 and 13, 14%.
Right. Full-bodied, very dark.
Full-bodied, I mean, this is a beer you can chew.
Black is black.
It's one of my favorite styles, if not my favorite style of beer.
I mean, you look at the head on the Samuel Smiths, right? And it's kind of tannish. But some of these Imperial Russian stouts that you get,
you get
a very dark, dark head on it. You know, wow. kind of a blackish foam. It's kind of strange, but
I say that has to look strange. Like trying to picture that.
It does. Well, they're good.
They're really good.
They live up to their name.
And craft beer aficionados really love this style because they like the. It's like it's something you sip like a fine cognac, or it's.
I can see that
very high in alcohol, and you're not sitting down there to, you know, pound a pint of this stuff. It's something that you want to enjoy every sip. It's a, you know, higher alcohol, so it's.
It's kind of like the port wine of beers.
It's
right?
A great pairs well with a cigar for people that enjoy cigars. There's so many iconic beers now that are based Imperial Stouts, not necessarily Russian Imperial Stouts, but Imperial Stout, which is the stronger style stout. One of the ones dear to our hearts here in Michigan is KBS, Founders Kentucky Breakfast Stout.
Oh, man, that's so good.
And that's all. You take a base Imperial Stout, and they also make a wonderful Imperial Stout on its own. But then they make KBS, which incorporates, oatmeal, coffee, vanilla.
Mm-hmm. Barrel age.
And they age it in bourbon barrels in caves in Grand Rapids. Mm. And it comes out every March.
I'm salivating.
And I should have brought one. I really should have, because I have stashed a few away from last year. But it's almost like a craft beer person's Christmas when KBS is released. One of the downsides of it is there's so much demand for it.
Isn't that the one that you say you make the trip for every year?
Nope. That's a different one. Probably more people make the trip for KBS, but my personal favorite is Backwoods Bastard, which is actually Scotch Ale.
That's right.
It's the bourbon barrel-aged Scotch Ale from Founders. And I do. The first Monday in November is usually when they release, and I usually book a hotel room and make my way out there and get my two-case allotment. Now, KBS is much more, there's a higher demand and a lower supply of that, so that's a lot harder to get. Yeah. Now, I think you can get, two or three, four packs of that if you're
lucky.
You have to go online and register, for a lottery, and if you get the lottery, then you have to show up at the brewery on the day that you're allocated and pick up your two or three, four packs.
Right. Otherwise, you're stuck with hunting them down at your local bottle shops at the corner, and hopefully they have one.
And that's always a fun time.
They might sell you one bottle.
That's when KBS is released. There's the truck chasers come out.
Yeah,
and I've hit a few stores looking for KBS, and usually when it comes out, you're lucky to get one or two bottles.
Right.
Each store only gets a case or two, and there's such a demand that they take care of their better customers. They'll sell you one or two bottles. Some of them make you buy something else.
I like the Imperial Stout, though. You know, I mean, there isn't any that I don't like, but I like the Imperial Stout as a home brewer, right? Because as a base beer, I can do a lot of different things with it. And you're already mentioning a few things. You know, you can barrel age it. You can add coffee. You could add chocolate.
Vanilla
you could
beans.
Add vanilla. You could add peppers. You know,
cinnamon,
nutmeg, all kinds of things, and just have a really good time with it. And they're the kind of beer that, you know, it might be cold when you pull it out of the fridge, but you could savor it, and as it warms up, you're going to find all these different flavors and aromas just coming through that you didn't get when you first took your first sip, right?
You touched on an important
point. That's a real pleasure.
Now, when we did the IPAs in the last episode, those are to be served colder. But the Imperial Stouts, you really don't want them to be super cold, and as a sipping beer, as the glass warms, it's unbelievable how it improves with each passing minute as it gets warmer, and more flavors explode out of the liquid. It's just unbelievable. And a lot of people you don't want to have it room temperature at the beginning. You want to have it chilled to maybe 50, 55 degrees.
Mid-50s, yeah.
And then it's fine when it gets to room temperature. But it's just amazing how the flavors open up
at
warmer temperatures.
Yeah, that's a great experience.
So we do have some Russian Imperial Stout that Uncle Pete brewed.
Yep.
But before we do that, do you want to have that first, or would you rather have the Oatmeal Stout? Because that is the Oatmeal Stout by Samuel Smith is our beer of the week, and it was, up until I discovered Backwoods Bastard, it was my all-time favorite beer in the world. So it's pretty highly acclaimed. Let's start with that.
With a build-up like that, we got to try it.
Yeah.
We're going to go. The grand finale is going to be... We have two homebrewed stouts.
Yep.
But let's just go to the oatmeal stout.
Let's do the oatmeal. I agree.
It's all wrapped in foil.
Yes, this is a Samuel Smith's Old Brewery, Tadcaster, the celebrated oatmeal stout. So let's have some. Aaron, you seem to get neglected over there. Here.
No, I'm good.
Okay.
I love oatmeal stouts, so I'm excited.
So again,
I've added oatmeal once or twice to a couple of stouts I've done.
We remember I made a batch last year of where I put some. Vanilla beans in, and one thing, when you add things to beer, you can't just add them, because if you add vanilla beans, you risk infecting the beer with bacteria.
No. Right.
So
that's why I make a tincture.
You can make a tincture, and what you do is you put, what I did is I took a jar and I put Buffalo Trace bourbon in it, and I put the vanilla beans inside there, and I let it sit for 3-4 weeks, and the bourbon goes into, the vanilla flavor goes, steeps into the bourbon, and then you pour the whole thing into the batch.
Right. I use vodka for mine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for
a lot of
tinctures.
People use vodka because it's a neutral, and it doesn't add any flavor. I love bourbon, and that's what's great about homebrewing. You can do whatever the heck you want.
Yeah. Tinctures are great. I mean, that's like, I'll crush my cocoa beans and add it to a couple ounces of vodka and let it sit for a couple weeks until the flavors are extracted into that nice tincture. Or the vanilla beans, I'll dice them up and cut out the that center part of the vanilla bean where the real flavor comes from.
Sumatran coffee. I've used Sumatran coffee. Soaked in bourbon, and then I put the vanilla beans in that.
I've used those spice grinders, where you could put everything in the grinder, like a coffee bean grinder.
Yep, just mix it all up.
And just make a powder out of it and mix that in with my vodka and make a tincture.
So, everybody listening, if you have any ideas of some exotic flavor you'd like to put into a stout, send it to us. Tweet us at Michigan Beer Guy.
There could be something in it and, for you.
What's the most exotic stout you guys have ever heard of?
I don't. Most exotic.
Probably. I mean, the flavors. What you were just talking about. What's the craziest flavors you've ever heard of that you were like, wow, I didn't think you could do that.
Man,
I don't know.
You know, they're normally. You know what I really like is the Mexican stout, which is generally coffee and chili peppers.
Yeah.
Jalapenos and coffee. I don't know from terms of exotic. I'm sure there's something out there. What was that? Was that a stout that Neptune? Was it Neptune? Really bizarre.
I'd have to look up the ingredients in that to see. There was a whole bevy of ingredients.
That might be the answer to your question right there.
That had
what?
Molasses and all kinds of crazy stuff.
We're gonna look.
Coffee. I mean, it's the sky's the limit as far as your imagination.
So we had talked about the Planet series before in our last episode. Planet series. Was Bell's introduced to beer about every once a month, was it, for about a year?
Yep.
And named them after various planets. Some of them were good, some of them were not so good, but Neptune was probably the most bizarre. So here's what they say on their website. Spices: star anise, dried cayenne, raisins, dates, black pepper, hickory bark, dandelion root, nutmeg, grains of paradise, fenugreek seeds, and dates. Also brewed with maple syrup, molasses, and cane sugar in addition to hops and malt. Now, talk, there's the answer to your question.
That's a list.
That's a lot going on.
That's a busy beer right there, man. And I remember drinking that, and I was trying to pick out. I maybe got.
Were you confused?
I might have got four of those out of the list.
I thought it was fantastic.
It was good. No complaints.
Some of the early beers weren't so good in a lot of people's minds, but I really enjoyed Mars, which was their double IPA, and I really enjoyed. Saturn was their Saturn was the bourbon barrel wine, I think, and no one wants to go there. You know, we already did that
planet. the U planet, the one that starts with a U. We're not going there.
Okay, but anyway, there's the answer. I mean, can you possibly find anything that has all that in it? I don't know what anybody was doing when they made that recipe, but
I know as homebrewers, JR and I have experimented with some of your typical kitchen spices, like we said, chocolate, vanilla, coffee, stuff like that, cinnamon,
hot peppers. So, but,
was the strangest one? I remember last summer, right? They had that hot dog beer at the beer festival.
Greenbush, right?
Yeah, was it Greenbush?
I think so.
Yeah, at the summer festival.
I am just not interested by just that description.
Hey, you know what? We were at the beer festival. We saw this. We were like, we got to try it. We got to see. And it tastes exactly like a hot dog. I don't want to know how they made it.
I don't know how I feel about drinking a hot dog.
But you know what? I mean, everybody that tried it actually liked it. It was weird. So.
Were people shooting mustard into it?
Nope.
Mustard chaser.
I can't explain it. You just had to try it. And I looked for it at this beer festival, but they had all the 31 ice cream flavors.
Yeah, they had the ice cream. Hot dogs and ice cream.
But you know what? I mean, what an innovative brewery to even think to do that. So,
and gotta give them credit. What brewery was this again?
That was Greenbush Brewing in Sawyer, Michigan.
Yeah.
Oh, right down by the southwestern quarter of the state.
Here's the thing. It says, I think we have a wiener, Chicago-style hot dog beer brewed by Greenbush Brewing.
I don't think they'll be
Chicago-style, so what, you put a pickle on it?
Hey, man. A sport pepper, baby.
Celery salt.
Got to have that. And there probably was mustard in there. I'll bet you they put mustard seeds in it.
Yeah.
So you can, Pete, you know what? I just came up with a great idea for us to brew sometime.
Yeah, what'd you like?
We're going to make like a wheel, and we're going to spin it. We're going to put all kind of bizarre ingredients.
There you go.
We're going to spin it, and we're going to make like a recipe. Like,
there you go.
Call it Wheel of Fortune. Like,
we'll call it, I guess there is no Pluto now. Since Neptune was this, we'll call ours Pluto.
Yeah, Pluto's back.
We'll make our own darn planet.
Pluto's back in town. I like it.
Planet Love Drum.
It doesn't get enough respect.
Rest in peace to our boy Daryl Dawkins, who I'm a big 76ers fan, but I know he also played for the Pistons.
Ah, okay.
So
Chocolate Thunder.
Maybe we'll call it Planet Love Tron. We'll use chocolate malt. So, again, this oatmeal stout
is
just
amazing.
Solid.
It smells great.
There's nothing fancy about it with all these bizarre additives we're talking about. This is just straight oatmeal stout the way it's supposed to be, and it's just wonderful. It doesn't need any gimmick ingredients. It's just phenomenal by itself, and I guarantee you, if you go out and buy a bottle, you'll enjoy it. And if you don't, send it to me.
I get a kind of I don't know, it's kind of odd, but I get a little tobacco on the flavor.
You can definitely catch that.
As if I had a stogie, and I was really working a stogie. But yeah, I get a little tobacco on this. It's a little cool, though. I I'd like to have it warm up a little bit.
Yeah, well, see what happens. You know what? I'm going to let that sit for a little.
Oh, so aging your stouts, right? I mean, you can let them sit for a while.
Yeah.
I do. I let mine sit.
We should have covered in our last episode with the IPAs. You got to drink them fresh because the hops fade rather quickly.
Yeah, it changes. Yeah.
Usually about 2 to 3 months, the hops fade significantly. So like we talked about zombie dust in the last episode from Three Fluids. Zombie dust, when you get that and it's like fresh at the brewery, it's
drink it now, man.
Kind of like the, you know, we talked about the Guinness fresh from the brewery. It's phenomenal. But with a Russian Imperial Stout or a real strong Imperial Stout, you can cellar these for years, and actually they'll improve, and other flavors will evolve and develop.
Well, I mean, let's be clear. There's nothing wrong with drinking any beer fresh.
Right? Oh, no. Yeah, but
absolutely not. Drinking fresh.
Craft beer aficionados often will buy, like, say, a good, like a KBS comes out. They'll buy, like, a couple of them, and they'll drink one or two, and then they'll put the rest in their cellar, and they'll age them for a year or two. Now, I remember that one of the first craft beer, or first home brews I ever made was a Russian Imperial Stout. And I remember I took it to my homebrew club meeting, and there's a certified judge that judges competitions. And here I am, this new guy. It's like my second batch or something. Like, I'm on to make a, I'm sure I made all kinds of mistakes because I was new. But it came out pretty good. And he tasted it, and he goes, wow, this is pretty good. And he goes, is this an all-grain beer? I said, no. At that time, and when I was beginning, I started with extract, which most people do, which is basically the difference between extract brewing and all-grain. The easiest analogy would be baking a cake from a box versus from scratch. It cuts some corners, it cuts some time off of your brew day, and instead of having to extract the sugars out of the grains naturally, you just buy a jar of syrup.
It's
already extracted.
You're just being told how instead of told why.
They're doing the mashing for you.
They did half the work for you,
So anyway, so this was an extract beer, and he goes, oh, well, it really has a lot of flavor for it. I would have never thought this was an extract beer, so that made me feel real good. He goes, well, but what I want you to do, he goes, take it home, put it in a dark closet somewhere cool where it's the temperature's the same, all the, you know, in my basement cellar. Because cellar it for a year, bring it back to the meeting, and then cellar it for another year and bring it back to the meeting. And so I have done that, and each year it got better and better and better. But now it's been 3 years, and the last meeting I took him a 3-year one. I only have like 4 bottles left. And he goes, well, you know, it's starting to go backwards now. So that particular beer, it improved and kind of peaked about two and a half years, and now at 3 years it's starting to. So, but it's cool. It's cool to, you know, a lot of these guys that in the craft beer collectors and aficionados for years, they've got or five different years of KBS. And they have people over to their house and they say, hey, we're going to do a KBS verdict. And they'll try, okay, this year. And they try them all. And everybody's like, okay, well, we think this year is the best.
Or, yeah, they're different though. They do end up different.
But the point is, you can age these and the flavors will change and develop over time. And you get all these special flavors that don't exist from the get-go. You kind of got to wait, and you get rewarded if you're patient and let them age.
I suppose if it was a lower alcohol, you know, beer, it may not age as well as a higher
alcohol. But it gets preserved with the alcohol.
Right.
I always get, my favorite fruit is like a dark fruit, like a plum, and a really nice dark like fruit, like a plum raisiny. That's what I...
Figs and
that's
stuff
what
like
comes
that.
Out with age, you know, and that's not there at the beginning, but if you wait, it comes out, and it just makes it really, almost like a fine porter sherry.
That's true.
So that's a good point. You know, you can age stronger beers, almost any strong beer. Barley wines are another one where they're very strong.
But I always profess, you know, fresh is good. There's nothing wrong with drinking your stouts right away. Fresh beer is great beer. But don't be shy about cellaring a few, because you'll get the rewards like John's talking about. You know, some of those deep, dark flavors that'll develop as they sit down there getting happy, and you just forgot about them for a while.
Yep. Unless you're the king man on the island, and you just want your your tropical stout and your blunt.
Yeah.
And I don't think he ages anything, and it's probably be pretty difficult to age down there in the tropics where it's always hot.
Now, I remember a stout you did last year, John, and I was a lucky recipient, you know, was able to drink a few of these, where you actually cold pressed a coffee right into this batch of stout that you made. And if anybody knows about cold pressed coffee, I mean, it's a great way to make, you know, very flavorful and robust cup of coffee. So tell us about your cold press.
Well, what actually happened is I had had three different stouts on tap at my house at one time. I had one that was like a breakfast stout type thing, and the one that I had infused the vanilla beans and the coffee in. And then I had another one that was my homebrew club and I collaborated. I got a rye whiskey barrel, and we made an imperial stout, put it in the whiskey barrel. And then the third one I had a nice, a solid batch of dry stout, and it was like 6%. It wasn't too strong, not too weak. But, you know, I had all these great stouts, and I'm like, nobody wanted the dry stout. It was just
plain, right?
Nothing,
just,
you know, these other ones were exotic, and this, mm-hmm. I'm like, I got to do something to move this beer, or it's just going to sit there. So I got the idea from Doug Bolteis, who will probably be on joining us for a few shows, and we're going to have one of Doug's homebrews here shortly, Spumani Stout brewed with pistachio tea. But anyway, nice. He gave me the idea. I went out and bought a press just to do this, and I got some Sumatran coffee, and I would pour the liquid into the press, and then I'd pour the coffee and the beer into the press, mm-hmm. and put it into a growler. Fill the growler up with stout, and then I'd put the coffee infused into that, and it was phenomenal. So that's what he's talking about. So I took just an ordinary beer and basically found a way to add coffee to it, and it became from an ordinary beer to like a, you know,
it was like coffee.
Like an espresso stout.
It was like coffee that was carbonated. So, you know, imagine that.
Was it Buzz Beer from the Drew Carey Show?
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Oh, and you don't want to have a glass of that before bed. Yeah. It'll be up till 3 a.m.
Carbonated coffee. I got to tell you, one time I went to Brewery Vivant over in Grand Rapids, right? And it's in an old church, and they got stained glass and everything, and up where the altar used to be is where the bar is. Well, we went for brewer's breakfast, they called it, on the morning of the beer fest up there in Grand Rapids. And so we go to the brewer's breakfast at Brewery Vivant because they had a kitchen and they made food. And everybody's having breakfast, you know, eggs and potatoes and everything, but you know, eight, nine in the morning, you're having a beer with your breakfast. Well, besides having a beer, they were serving coffee on nitrogen. And you were talking earlier about this widget in the can, right? And the Guinness made the nitrogen gas, and it made a nice creamy glass.
So it was just coffee? It wasn't alcoholic?
It was just coffee on nitrogen, and it came in a glass.
How interesting.
And it was all frothy and foamy and creamy and everything. And it was cold. It was a cold coffee. It was fantastic.
Oh, it was
beautiful. It went great with breakfast.
Oh, I want to try that.
Well, let's try Doug's Spumani Stout now.
Yes, let's.
It's carbonated.
So you're going to have a recipe for this to share, Jim?
Yep. All the recipes for all the home brews that we try will be published on MichiganBeerGuy.com. So visit the site, and you can download the recipes. Brew it yourself if you're a home brewer. And we're going to have this. I've never had this.
I've heard much
Spumani
about it.
Spumani Stout. It is Doug and I brewed a batch together, the one I talked to you about, where I put the vanilla beans in the coffee, except he did the same batch I did, only he used vodka like you did. So we had two kind of different batches, but they were the same base.
Pistachios, right? And he made
in the Spumani Stout.
He made a tincture of pistachio of some sort?
He made a pistachio tea using pistachio nuts.
Wow, smells really good. Smells really good. I mean, there's something I've never tried is pistachio nuts. I mean, I love them. I sit there and eat them all day. You give me a bag of pistachio nuts, and I'm going to town. Mm-hmm. Wash them down with a good beer. Now you're going to put two in the same thing?
Okay. Doug Bolteis's Spumani Stout is an oatmeal stout using flaked oats, powdered Dutch cocoa, 12 ounces of Michigan cherry concentrate from Michigan cherries, 1 pound of pistachio tea infused with vodka. The vodka, again, will make sure that it's a tincture and kill any bacteria so the batch doesn't get infected. Then, not only did he do that, he froze it, skimmed the oil off because the oils will make the consistency of the beer not
from
good.
From the nuts, you mean?
Yeah, from the tea that he made with the nuts.
There's kind of an oil slick.
Oils come in the nuts, so when you freeze it, he found a way to get rid of the oil because the oil will go into the beer and make it kind of funky. Hmm. So that way he was able to eliminate the oil.
Is
that
it, like it floated on top probably or something? Huh?
And he infused the tea with 8 ounces of vodka, like I said, so it wouldn't spoil the beer. And here we have it.
A lot going on there.
I get cherry.
I can taste the cherry.
Definitely.
Right up front.
I don't taste the nuts.
It needs
too
to
much.
Warm up a little bit, I think, but I get the cherries right off the bat. Man,
so
nice.
You were asking about unique ingredients. Mm-hmm. Pistachios, there's another one. I mean, not even Neptune had pistachios in it. So I got to give Doug some credit for coming up with a very unique. That's what's just so much fun about homebrewing. You can come up with an idea and make it happen. I still want to do that wheel, ingredient wheel, random ingredients.
Yeah, dial an ingredient.
Could be really bad, though. Like, what if you get, like, pineapple and hot pepper or something?
Ooh. The wheel of beer.
That's sweet and hot. That's
that
good.
Might not be bad.
They got mango habanero hot sauce.
Sure. What's the pizza that they have with the pizza and the ham?
The Hawaiian style.
Bacon and pineapple.
Right.
Yeah.
Speaking of bacon, I saw Dark Horse right at one of their beer releases. They pushed beer through a randalizer. You talked about a randalizer earlier. They packed that randalizer with bacon. And they pushed the beer through it, right? So it came out this bacon-flavored beer. Now, what's wrong with that?
Nothing.
Anything's good with bacon. We all know that. You ever had that bacon maple porter from, what's it, Funky Buddha?
Rogue, isn't it? Is it Rogue?
I thought it was...
Or Funky Buddha?
Funky Buddha, yeah, I think, is the maple bacon porter.
Yeah, they had one, yeah.
And then there is one by Rogue that was like a bacon maple donut or
something.
Donut,
yeah, it was kind of strange.
All the pink bottle ones are weird that Rogue comes out with.
Yeah, like so, the one with the yeast.
More answers to your question. What was that other donut one?
Way off the chart, though, was that one where the guy harvested yeast out of his beard.
Oh, yeah, that was a Rogue beer.
This guy made a beer. It was a beard.
What was it called? Rogue website.
Yeah, it was a Rogue brewery.
I'm pulling that up.
The guy harvested yeast out of his beard.
Oh, and then, see, now my day job, I have a food safety certificate. I cannot abide by that.
No, there's something wrong with that picture, right? It's like picking it out of your beard and throwing it in a beer and let it ferment. Oh. But it was out there, man. That's how crazy it gets.
We should call our buddy Nathan Peck. I'll bet you he could do that.
So, good aroma. You know, I get nice roast, a little bit of...
I did.
This beer is made from pure hipster beard.
I did find the beard beer, but... And it also opened me up to something else I forgot to mention with bizarre ingredients, the sriracha stout.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
that was a good sriracha. One. That was a really good
one. I liked it. You liked the hot beers, I know.
That's like the flavor du jour for the last couple of years.
Yeah. Sriracha's blowing up.
We actually, on one of our batches of Robert de Habanero Imperial Stout, threw in some sriracha. But it was because we weren't happy with the beer as soon as it was done in the boil. So we were getting kind of crazy going, well, this is a shot batch, so we're just going to throw everything and anything in there. I thought it came out good, and I ended up bottling it and ended up drinking it.
Well, you guys ready for the description of the beard beer from Rogue?
Yeah, let's go. Yeah. The beard beer.
Beard beer is brewed with a yeast created from brewmaster John Meyer. Beard. No need to freak out. Brewers have used wild yeasts in beer making for centuries. John has had the same old growth beard since 1978 for over 18,000 brews.
Sounds like a force.
So it is no great surprise that a natural yeast ideal for brewing was discovered in his beard. What does beard beer taste like? Try it. We think you'll be surprised.
I'm all good.
And there's a picture of the guy and his beard up there.
Oh, so, man.
I can safely tell you that's not one I've tried.
Not me.
So he's brewed so much home. What they're saying is he's brewed so much beer. He's developed a yeast in his beard.
It says he's brewed over 18,000 brews, you know, in his career as a professional brewer. So
the stuff's living in there, huh? Oh, my goodness. Yep.
From an authentic Brooklyn hipster.
Science project on his chin.
He could probably, squeeze his beard out and make a bowl of soup or something out of it. Hey, look what we got.
No soup for me. So what else we got here? I think it's time for the grand finale. It's time for Uncle
Pete's
beer.
Working on the Spumante, but I'll talk a little bit about it.
You know what? I just got a taste of pistachio, a little bit salty.
As it warms up
I was
going
to say, as it warms up a little bit, it balances out.
It was not in there at all earlier, so it's there now. Cherry, and then it follows up with pistachio at the end and a little bit of salt.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm getting some salt. You're right. Interesting.
So Doug Bulteis, good job, buddy.
Yeah.
We need to get you into the studio for our next show.
Hope you didn't wear your fingers out cracking all those nuts.
Well, you can buy them now with the...
We should. I think we should have him name this D's Nuts.
D's Nuts.
D's Nuts. Spumante Stout.
Very interesting.
Although sales would not be robust, kind of like the beard beer.
Oh, there's other stouts I've heard, like peanut butter and stuff like that.
It's better than calling it tea bag beer or something.
You know what? There are.
There's nothing wrong with tea beer, though. I've put tea in my beers.
Have you ever Twisted and Bitter from Harvest Done Brewing in England?
No, I was looking.
It's Twisted and Bitter.
I was looking for that tonight. Actually, isn't that's an English IPA, right?
It's not an IPA. I think it's just a bitter.
Oh, okay.
It's an English bitter, but it's really good.
Yeah.
Twisted.
Anything twisted I like. Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, man. Even Twisted Tea. If you're talking about tea, they have that. That's like an Alco Pop. Samuel Adams, Boston beer. It's called Twisted Tea. It's actually not bad, like on a hot day. I wouldn't consider it a craft beer by any stretch of imagination. But
now I did make a beer that had tea in it. Actually, it ended up being almost like a Arnold Palmer beer, if you can imagine that. But I made this IPA. I put in an ounce of black English tea and another ounce of some kind of black tea right in the boil when I made the beer. And then I zested a grapefruit. I took the grapefruit skin and zested all that juicy, tasty, citrusy stuff in there. And a tangerine and an orange and zested all that in there.
That sounds good.
Right in the boil and then hopped the shit out of it, right? Ended up fermenting. And when it came out carbonated, it was like very citrusy, of course, but with a tea, you know, kind of in the back, a little tea flavor. And I swear it was like a carbonated Arnold Palmer with about an 8% alcohol
cake. Hey, I'd hit that.
Yeah, hey, well, speaking delicious. Of, in the same vein, talking about stouts, you brought that up. Where do you guys stand on black and tans or black and whatevers? Yes, no?
Because
I know some people aren't fans. Some people take them or leave them. Some
you know,
people
my,
love them.
My first exposure to black and tan is when I worked for a distributor that sold Guinness Import Company brands.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, Bass Ale and Guinness were in the same house. So black and tan was always a Guinness and a Bass. Now Guinness is owned by Diageo, and Anheuser-Busch InBev owns Bass, and it's brewed in St. Louis. So I think the marriage is over. But I guess at the end of the day, you could still buy the two
beers.
Was
it supposed
to
be Guinness and Harp?
No, that's a half and half.
Oh, okay. Right? See, it's...
Black and tan is always with Bass, because Bass is a porter. Or no, it's an ale, but it's a...
Don't
it's
they make that special little gadget? I'm sure you know the name of it, John. For making a black and tan, so that
what
you
the
keep
little spoon?
The little spoon. Yeah. It looks like an upside down turtle.
Yeah,
used
to
or
have
something.
A little black and tan,
like
kit.
A little turtle shell thing. And yep. If you poured the beer over it, it would keep the two layers separate.
So you have like a black and a tan, like a little line in the middle separating the two, because one of them's heavier than the other.
Right,
but.
You
know,
seen that, Chris? No.
I used to drink them when I worked. You know, I worked for the distributor, and personally, I'd rather just have a Guinness.
One or the other,
yeah,
straight up.
And I used to love Bass Ale when it was brewed in England, and their Red Pyramid trademark is one of the oldest trademarks known in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a really bad taste in my mouth the way that the brand has been kind of, I don't want to say destroyed, but tarnished,
lessened,
yeah. Right?
Tarnished. And I'm sure people affiliated with that brand in England, they're, you know, feel the same way. I mean, it's just not, you can't replicate the water there. It's very, isn't it Burton-on-Trent, I think?
Right.
And Burton-on-Trent has a very unique water characteristics that nowhere else in the world has. And you can't make Bass Ale in St. Louis. It won't be Bass Ale. It'll be
Bass
Ale. It does not taste the same.
No, and it doesn't. And you know what? Look at the sales figures. The stats don't lie. Yeah. Their sales are way down, and so is Beck's. All those brands that they bought, the consumer is responding by not buying it. And it's sad. It's sad because it was such a good, iconic beer. I would love a black and tan if you had the old Bass in it.
The real deal,
I don't want the new one.
Well, speaking of mixing beers, I know a lot of our friends, beer nuts like us, right? When we get together and we're drinking all these good beers, sometimes we end up mixing, And
it works out pretty good sometimes.
It's interesting some combinations you get, you know. Oh.
Where did that concept, I mean, was that just bartenders being bored?
There are actually blended beers that are bottled and sold.
Zold?
Oh, yeah. No, marketed as blended beers. I'm trying to remember.
Zima. How about that? No, that's not blended. Okay, I had to go there, sorry.
Well, we do have very special beer here to wrap up the show.
The grand finale.
I'll talk a little bit about that one.
You may have the same.
This is my Robert de Habanero that I collaborated with my niece's husband, Mike. And he's got a very creative mind when it comes to beers, and he's very enthusiastic.
And he's a publican, too. Not a Republican, but a publican.
A publican, that's right.
He owns and operates a establishment.
Nice little place, yeah.
The Rockery in Wyandotte, Michigan.
So props.
What's if you operate a pub, you are called a publican?
That is correct.
That's right.
Yeah.
So props to Mike, but in our creativeness, as we put our heads together and tried to come up with some interesting beers, we came up with the Robert de Habanero Chocolate Vanilla Stout.
Oh, boy, I can't wait.
And we're passing it around now so we can all have a taste. And this was in a 5-gallon batch, had 20 pounds of grain, okay? So that's a pretty hefty amount of grain in a 5-gallon batch, right? As a home brewer. And we had 4 ounces of hops. One of those ounces of hops went into the, you know, secondary, that's what we call it, when it's clarifying, sitting in another tank after it was done fermenting and it had a chance to sit around for a while and get clear. We put the hops in. But the interesting part for us was making these tinctures. A tincture of chocolate out of cocoa nibs, a tincture of vanilla out of vanilla beans and a tincture of habanero. We roasted two habanero peppers in the toaster oven until they sweated and diced them up real fine, put them in some vodka and let it sit for about 2 weeks. And to get the right flavor, we took 8-ounce sample of the beer after it was done, and we hadn't added the habanero yet. And we used an eyedropper, very scientific, but we siphoned up some of that habanero tincture, and in an 8-ounce glass with a eyedropper, we added enough drops until it tasted right. You know, not too hot, not too cold, just like Baby Bear, right? Didn't want their porridge too hot or too cold. It had to be just right.
Well, this is just right.
And I'll tell you what, John, I'm surprised that you still have one. This is probably the only one of these in existence, so I appreciate it.
Well, you know what? If you remember, one day we met at the Rockery, Michael's Bar.
I do. It was in the winter.
You handed one off to me, and I kind of stashed it away, and when we were doing this show, it was there for us.
That was in the dead of winter, I remember.
You know, it's kind of beer karma. You know, things just worked out. So I'm so glad we were having a show about stout, and I had to share this.
Thank you.
All of these.
You know, I got to say, there's a lot more vanilla than I remember it being.
I smell it.
And that's a good thing. I love a strong vanilla flavor. I know that in 5 minutes, this will taste completely different.
Yep.
But at the beginning, with it being cold, the vanilla is the predominant flavor.
Label says it was bottled a couple days before Christmas Eve, and you couldn't open it until Martin Luther King Day.
That's right, man.
Just yeah, to give listeners a time frame on the...
You want to let it age properly so it comes together and carbonates.
When you bottle beer, you have to let it bottle condition. Otherwise, it'll be flat.
What does that mean?
There is yeast naturally already in there. And what you do is before you bottle it, you introduce some extra sugar in, usually priming sugar, we call it.
Yeah, corn sugar.
Usually just corn sugar, or it could be even the table sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And you put a small amount in there. And what happens is when you cap the bottle, the yeast that's in there ferments that additional sugars out and creates CO2 and alcohol. So that's what gives you enough carbonation in the bottle, so when there's fizz in it and it gets bubbly.
Oh, nice.
Otherwise, if you didn't put any sugar in and you bottled it, you'd just be pouring flat beer out.
Ah.
Now, the difference is when you keg beer, you hook it up to a CO2 tank. So you've got a tank full of gas that pressurizes the beer, and over a period of time, the gas permeates into the beer and creates... That's a different way. That's a CO2 tank. You carb it that way. You don't need the sugar. But when you bottle, you don't have the benefit of that tank applying the CO2 pressure. So you just put a little sugar in there, and then the yeast works its magic.
Can I see the bottle?
So that's called bottle conditioning. And what happens when you bottle condition? At the very bottom of the bottle, there will be some yeast sediment. So at the very last sip, you usually want to leave in there. It won't hurt you. It just maybe tastes a little bit funky, but
yeah, it doesn't really hurt it. This was a 5-gallon batch, and I'm reading my notes here on my recipe. I see here that I said I siphoned off 2 gallons. Of the 5 gallons. This, I don't think this is among that. This is the original batch. But I took 2 gallons of this and I added bourbon-soaked oak chips and 1 pound of reduced fresh raspberry puree. So I know that's all gone.
I didn't know you did that.
I did. I took 2 gallons and, you know, added a little more stuff just to play around. And we drank that down pretty quick. So, but I get a lot of roast, you know, a lot of vanilla.
Yeah.
And the heat in the back. You get that heat, Chris? Huh?
Yep. Yeah. I tasted the vanilla and then, yeah, heat in the back of the throat.
There it comes, yeah.
Yeah, it took a while to kick in, but yeah, it's like a multi-stage beer. It like hits like, you in levels and waves. That washes over you.
I'll tell you, when I was telling you earlier that I had that over on habanero. Like I saw it on the menu, I was instantly like, I want to try that just to say what that was. And it, I don't know. It seems a little adventurous, but it doesn't come across as people would think it would.
Right.
If you think about habanero and beer.
Right, right.
I think the key is what Uncle Pete did. He used a few drops, tried it, used a few drops. The key is to get the level right.
Yeah.
If you put too much of that in there, it's going to melt your face off. But he got it right.
We were so worried when we were doing that about overdoing it, because they would go the whole batch, because you can't go backwards.
Right.
And, you know, so we were very, very cautious.
The other thing I want to mention is he mentioned bourbon-soaked oak chips.
Mm-hmm.
That bourbon barrels are hard to get, expensive, and a lot of the big brands do 55-gallon barrels. I mean, that's
gigantic.
Like 11 batches of beer of our 5-gallon batches we usually brew.
Wow.
And can you imagine the struggle it is to deal with a 55-gallon barrel full of liquid? To have to move that around and stuff? You have to make like a cradle for it. It's like...
Fill it, empty it,
so,
right, clean it.
An alternative to that is to use oak chips. You can use toasted oak chips and soak them in bourbon, and then you get that. It still does the same, has the same effect of withdrawing flavor from the wood.
Right.
And into the bourbon, and it's kind of like a shortcut where you don't have to go through all that hassle. So that's what he's done with this, and he's done a wonderful job. It's one of the best, one of my favorite home brews I've ever had from anybody. So my compliments to the chef, Pete. And again, this recipe is available to everybody on MichiganBeerGuy.com. We'll have it posted in a PDF form. So download it and brew it and let us know what you think.
Have fun with it.
On Twitter, at MichiganBeerGuy, just to remind you. No. What, man, not learn things.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm curious because, like you said, you post all the recipes up there. Do you find that there's homebrewers that are very secretive about what they do,
sure,
or
yeah,
try and
there
be more
are some,
proprietary?
I think the craft beer or the homebrewing community is very open. I mean, everybody's, you know, we're all proud of what we do, and we all want, it's kind of like a share the love thing. It's kind of like the beer it forward stuff.
Yeah. It's like a science to it where you all advance together.
That's right. Really secretive about it. I think most people are more than happy to share their recipes.
I tell you,
it's not like we're out there in business to against each other, fighting each other.
Right.
Even some of the big brewers share their recipes. We're an open book. I mean, the recipe is one thing. I mean, you still have to craft it your own way.
Yeah. JR and I go to a number of home brewers. You know, there's groups of us, right, in different areas, and we meet maybe once a month, and we go to meetings, and we'll bring we'll bring some of our wares, share it, and the best thing about it is you tell them, here's how I made it, here's the recipe, and you get feedback, and so we're all learning from each other, and we're comparing notes and giving each other, you know, helping each other make it better, suggestions, or, you know, maybe it's perfect, and everybody loves it, and you're good to go.
You know, and I remember one of the first meetings I went to, they said, hey, if you have a bad batch, bring that in, too. We want to be able to taste that and figure out what happened, and you learn from it. I mean, you're never going to get better. And trust me, we've all had some botched batches. That I had a batch, what did we call it? The wild sour from hell or something.
Yeah.
And I brewed a rye dunkel from extract. I didn't have time. I all grain brew, but I was in a hurry one week, and a buddy, I promised him I was going to brew at his house, and I just went to the store and said, just give me some extract. I don't want to have this be a long
quick,
brew
quick,
day.
Yeah.
And I cut a few corners, and it cost me, because when I kegged the batch and poured it out, it tasted
got something wild
nasty.
In there. You got a little wild yeast in there of some sort.
It was a little sour.
Out,
it was
came out
be.
Of your mustache, I think. Maybe
that could be, but you know what? I'm not drinking it. There was a couple people there. Oh, it's not that bad. I'll take it home with me. I'm like,
hey, here you go, buddy.
So there was a beer called Hopstash, I remember. But yeah. I don't think it had that yeast from the mustache.
So the failed beer that I made, I mean, I believe what I did is...
I liked it. I tasted it. I liked it.
I hate it.
A few people liked it that night.
So it's now down,
you dumped
down
it?
The drain.
You dumped it? Yep. Nobody took it? Darn.
It's part of the Gone Network. But, you know, I learned
sometimes
something
from that. Happens.
And I learned that I was in a real hurry that day, and I cut some corners, and the beer didn't come out so good.
See, you learn not to hurry.
No hurry. And the other thing, I think I was being punished by the home brewing gods for going back to extract brewing when I'm an all-grain brewer, and I just got lazy one day and say, you know what, I'm just going to go back and do this extract batch. I just want to make a quick batch. So no more of that either.
You're trying to half-ass. You got a whole ass.
Right? You got it. Yep. So.
Turn the other cheek.
Stouts.
Stouts are good stuff. Man. It's one of my favorite styles, and Imperial Stout, it's getting better as it warms, isn't it?
Yeah.
It does. It changes.
So now the vanilla was, like, really strong at the beginning. It's, like, mellowing out.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow, yeah.
The vanilla was overpowering.
And, the peppers
here,
kicking
Chris,
in.
Chris, take another shot off of that.
But honestly, any homebrewers out there, brew this. It's wonderful. It's, you know, Uncle Pete's kind enough to share this recipe.
Oh, you're more than welcome.
I'm not going to just borrow the recipe. I'm going to beg him to co-brew a batch.
We're
going to
make it.
See, yeah. I see this one going with tacos.
Yeah, it would. I think,
it's good taco beer.
I'm going to be doing this one again soon because I tend to make these when the cooler temperatures are upon us, you know, the fall and the winter.
Yeah.
And I'm really thinking there's got to be cinnamon in the future of this thing because with this No Rules Vietnamese Porter that just came out from Perrin Brewing.
How about a little toasted coconut?
And some toasted coconut would be fun to put in there, too.
Yeah.
Imagine the sugary sweetness you'd get from that.
See how cool it is to be a home brewery?
Yeah. You can just
pick and choose what you want to put in.
Use your imagination.
So, Pete, before we end the show, can you tell us about one of my other all-time great homebrews that you make, the Honey Can't Buy Me Love?
Honey Can't Buy Me Love, sure. Yeah, that was another collaboration with my niece's husband, Mike. And this is actually, we did it a couple times as a, like a Imperial IPA. So like a double batch. In a 5-gallon batch, you know, we doubled up the grain bill and really tried to pump up the alcohol and the body and the flavor, right, and the color. But now, I mean, I'm actually in the realm of barley wine, which is starting to get up there in the, you know, 11, 12, 13% arenas. And this is a very strong beer that we've done, Honey Can't Buy Me Love, American Barley Wine. And this is another 20-pound grain bill on a 5-gallon batch. But we actually added 2 pounds of orange blossom honey at the end of the boil to really kick it up a notch. And this is a very, you know, I don't have any here with me tonight, but we'll have to do one of these nights.
Oh, absolutely. And I love a good barley wine, and I've had this before, and it's excellent.
Yeah.
But we will post the recipe on MichiganBeerGuy.com.
Absolutely.
And we'll feature that in a later show after you do another batch.
You betcha.
Okay, well, episode 2, Beer Nuts.
In the books.
We're going to wrap it up in the books. A lot of empty bottles and cans hanging out in the studio.
It's like a war zone in here.
I know, right? But, you know, we made it through. It's
dead soldiers.
Yeah, but I've always enjoyed, you know, I especially enjoyed this episode because I've always been a fan of the porters of the darker beers. Make sure you check us out on iTunes. Rate us 5 stars. Rate us, review us.
Let us know what you think.
See, we... Time for craft beer podcast, people. Cut me some slack. Anyway,
I think we all sound a little different than we did at the beginning of this show.
Yeah. At MichiganBeerGuy.com, you can follow John. MichiganBeerGuy.com. You go there, all the recipes will be posted. John will throw up some links.
Hey, and I want to throw out some swag, too. I've got some really nice Michigan Beer Guy craft glasses that I had made up. So tweet us out. Give us some love. Tweet hashtag Beer Nuts to @MichiganBeerGuy on Twitter, and we'll randomly select a listener to receive one of these coveted glasses.
Yeah, and to tell a friend. Tell people if you're out there in the craft beer community, share this with people. I mean, this podcast, how they grow, it's organic. It's grassroots, at least for now. Government doesn't have its hooks in this yet. You know, they have been radio and TV, but that's the great thing about podcasts is it's the whole grassroots element. So just share it with friends. Tell people. So, I mean, it sounds like a community that is more than willing to share things.
Yeah, homebrewers are sharers, apparently. So.
Yes, so, we are. As I always say, AMF, stay thirsty, my fiends.
All right. Cheers.
If you enjoy this show and want more people to know about it, head on over to iTunes, leave a comment, and rate it 5 stars. Make sure you like and share us on Facebook, and don't forget to follow us on Twitter. Just search for Christopher Media. Thank you in advance for supporting Christopher Media by clicking on the PayPal button and by clicking through to all the sponsors who support ChristopherMedia.net. Most importantly, we would like to take the time to extend an extra special thanks to you. Christopher Media could not exist without your support. Thank you for visiting ChristopherMedia.net, and thank you for listening. Christopher Media. Let's make some noise. Thank you for visiting ChristopherMedia.net.